Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
It's a fun day today on Crossover, and we have two guests that are going to help us enjoy the afternoon. Dan Rothermel, who is director, is it, of the Savoy?
Music director
of the Gilbert and Sullivan, the Savoy Company here in Philadelphia. Well, actually, in the Delaware Valley, I suppose. And Richard Schaap, who is many, many things, primarily a very fine singer. And Richard, let us have your credentials.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I joined Savoy in 2003, although I began in 1962 with their performance of Ruddigore as a member of the audience. And that was my musical epiphany.
I see.
I said, classical music is what I want to follow.
Oh, I see. You didn't think so before then.
Well, I was only 12 years old. How would I even know?
And Dan, you also are a singer, is that right? Or were?
Well, I sang with the great Martin Green, but I have been with Savoy since 1981. I've been the musical director since 1981. Before that, I did appear on stage 1 year, and I also was an accompanist for the company for 2 years.
But your love is really being is directing the whole nine yards, as we say, and there are many. There's a lot of yardage there as well. And, of course, Dick is can we call you Dick on the air?
You can, no? Yes.
Dick Schaap is known, well, you have several hats as well, is that right?
Well, I do have a day job, but I went to Temple University College of Music before the Esther Boyer name was attached to it. Then I went to Curtis to work in its opera program there in the early 70s. Went to the London Opera Center, sang for a while, and then got married and had to get a day job. I've been in music administration for the most part ever since.
Music administration, but you are singing, and you are also going to be doing some other work vocally abroad, and we'll get to that a little bit later on. But what we're going to talk about now is the Savoy Company's latest production of Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore. Now, you had a performance last night at Longwood Gardens, and you have the second of these two performances this evening at 8:30 at Longwood Gardens, and then...
And then on June 15th and 16th at the Academy of Music in Center City.
Longwood, of course, has a wonderful area. I don't know if they have a shell there yet. I do remember that they were building
a shell at
some point. They were supposed to. And, of course, you pray that it won't rain.
I mean, yes,
there's always that problem. I know being a harpist, all you do is tune when you're playing there. So, I do remember seeing the A production. I don't even remember what it was, but it was a wonderful production. It was a celebration, I believe, of was it the 100th anniversary of the company?
Yes, but that was at the Mann Center.
At the Mann Center, okay.
Right.
Which was also outside.
Yes.
Yes. And what are the challenges that you face when you perform in these places?
Well, obviously, you mentioned one, the tuning, and also the pit is not particularly large at Longwood, and to accommodate a full orchestra, which we need to do, generally the timpani has to be on the grass outside of the pit.
Oh, that is awful for the timpanist. I'm so sorry. And, of course, carrying the sound doesn't really carry that.
No, way. Although they have an excellent sound system at Longwood. And in fact, many people say they can understand the words better there than they can sometimes at the Academy of Music because it's a fine system.
Now. Well, of course, Longwood is an exquisite setting.
Yes, but again, the weather is a challenge. When I did the Mikado in 03, it was 45 degrees and wet. Fortunately, I was dressed in something akin to a mummer's costume, so I was fairly insulated. Then the next year for Sorcerer, it was, I think, probably in the mid-80s and humid.
Yes, never knows.
Yeah, one never knows, but the show goes on, except when the rain starts to fall.
Well, the show has been going on for how many years, Dan?
For 106 years.
Tell us a little bit about the background of the Savoy.
Well, the Savoy Company was founded in 1901 by a gentleman named Dr. Alfred Reginald Allen, who was an eminent surgeon who was in love with Gilbert and Sullivan, and he'd seen many of the operas in England, and he felt that American performances were just too colloquial. And so he wanted to do a production that would be exactly as Gilbert and Sullivan intended. So with a small group, they did Trial by Jury at Marion Cricket Club in 1901, and it was so successful that they expanded, and the next year did The Sorcerer and Trial by Jury, and then they performed at the old Broad Street Theater, and eventually annually at the Academy of Music and at Longwood Gardens.
How many people do you have in the company?
I think this year there are about 70, 80.
About 70, 80 people.
If you include the backstage, which is a whole
of course,
other contingent.
Very, yes.
Yeah,
but are these regular people that have come for many, many years, or are you always getting stragglers in or new faces?
Oh, I wouldn't use the word stragglers.
No. Many, many new faces every year.
Yeah.
And it's a fairly youthful company. And I think we attract a lot of young people new to the area who have done music theater in college or are looking for a venue. And, we fill the bill and they get to sing in a place like the Academy of Music, which is pretty great.
Well, I would say it certainly is. And of course, what I meant that only in the finest sense, that they were not, that they were not regulars that belonged to the core group, as it were.
Right.
I'm sure you must have people that have been there for many, many years.
Oh, yes, we have certainly some. And, we're very fortunate in that even though our principals are not paid, we've attracted many very fine professional singers who just love to do the work and appreciate the venue, the Academy, for example. And
you have one sitting here.
Exactly.
Right, Richard. Yeah. I mean, you certainly are. Dick Schaap is a professional singer. My goodness, he has a background that we'll kind of talk about a little bit if you want to right now.
Well, if you ask, yes.
Tell us a little bit about your
background. Well, my background, after I went graduated Curtis and went to London, I sang for 2 years in Israel for a full year with the Israel National Opera Company, which a few years before I got there had been, the crucible for Placido Domingo.
Really?
In fact, one of the scores I had to learn Eugene Onegin in Hebrew instead of Russian was Domingo's score with Hebrew written in Spanish transliteration. And silly me, I didn't pocket that score. I was so honest, I turned it back in, but I could have had Domingo's study score. And then I freelanced with the various orchestras in Israel. And we mentioned earlier, that sometimes you do get married and you have children and you have to make a decision as to, do I want to be on the road all the time,
which
fighting for a
difficult
career?
Very
difficult. So I went into music administration for the most part.
But you were still performing quite
a bit. But I was still performing.
As a matter of fact, you're going to be performing in London, aren't you? Oh, no, outside of London.
Outside of London. There is an international Gilbert and Sullivan Festival in the town of Buxton, which is up towards Manchester. I guess it's been going on for about 15 years now. It had its roots in Philadelphia, didn't it, Dan? There was part of the Smiths started performances in Philadelphia.
Well, actually, yes, they did. They did performances. They did the Gilbert and Sullivan Festival first in Buxton, then brought it as well to Philadelphia for 2 years.
So there is a
There's a connection there.
Well,
Right.
So there's a connection. And so there are five or six Gilbert and Sullivan societies in the immediate area. And the gentleman who's playing Sir Joseph with Savoy and sings with other groups as well had the idea, let's have a union, a conglomeration of groups to go over to Buxton this year. So we're going to perform Iolanthe August 4th at the festival.
So actually, though, I do remember when you had the anniversary, Dan, we had you had visitors from the Savoy in London, didn't you?
The Doyle-Card Opera Company.
Yes, the Doyle-Card, which is, I would say, the definitive group, certainly, that through the years was recognized as that was the group that sang, of course.
Oh, absolutely.
And, of course, Martin Green was one of the great ones from that company. But I can say from my own experience that I knew all about Sir Joseph Porter KCB when I was in seventh grade. And I also knew the words to the Mikado when I was in Glee Club. So it's a marvelously accessible way to learn music and to learn, I guess, It's opera, I guess. Yes, opera. It's an opera it is. Or operetta, it's would you say?
Well, they called them comic operas, which they are. And, I mean, generally people refer to them as operettas, but they really are operas. I mean, they are not the loosely strung together pieces that, for example, some of the Victor Herbert things are.
Yes, that's certainly
music.
Yes, gorgeous music, but brilliant. I mean, and of course, Sir Arthur Sullivan was a marvelous, marvelous composer. And you have some gems. I mean, both of you have brought some wonderful things in for our audience to listen to. And again, we're talking about the performance of the HMS Pinafore with the Savoy Company of Philadelphia, but the history and the people that sang, for instance. You were telling me, Dick, that Nelson Eddy was part
Nelson
of that.
Nelson Eddy sang several performances, particularly of Iolanthe, with Savoy Company. Nelson Eddy grew up here as in Philadelphia.
Of course.
Was a reporter for the old, I think, the Bulletin at one point. Then there was Margaret Harshaw.
Who was a Metropolitan Opera star.
Yes, she taught at Curtis Institute of Music when I was there. And I didn't know until I read her obituary, she was born in Narberth and went to Lower Merion High School.
Well, I guess,
Wilbur Evans, another Philadelphia trained singer. And I remember seeing him, back in the early 60s, perform Gilbert and Sullivan.
I saw him at the Paper Mill Playhouse in Millburn, New Jersey, doing something. And I remember that name. And of course, that was another venue that was trying to keep operetta alive. And musical comedy. And I believe, for me, I would so love to have more of this available. Certainly the Savoy specializes in Gilbert and Sullivan. That's what you do. But it would be so wonderful to have an operetta company around, a company that does all these wonderful operettas on a smaller scale, not necessarily revivals at Lincoln Center. And for me, I, as you can, if anyone listens to us here at the station, you know that Jack Moore and I kind of we have our fun during the drives because we pull out all of these operetta selections and nobody plays them anymore.
Well, if I go out on a limb a little bit here, I think there is an unfortunate snobbery of people that think, well, if it isn't Verdi or Mozart, it's third-class music in the operettas. And that's why I really enjoy your programming, Jill, of this operetta music, because if anybody tries to sing this and they are not a really good singer,
it's
really
demanding.
Abysmal.
It's kind of like, I wouldn't say exactly, but the Zarzuelas. You know, so difficult
very
high. I know for the tenors, they're very, very, very high. And these are not considered opera. But they are really operetta, you know, I mean,
exactly.
In a sense.
No.
And so, here we are. So tell us a little bit about this this Caruso thing that you brought. Dick, Dick found a gem that is just incredible.
The great Enrico Caruso, being a great marketer himself, did record in more than Italian. And so there are several recordings of Caruso in English, such as Over There by George M. Cohan, which he did for the war bond drives in World War I. And there's this recording from 1912 of Arthur Sullivan's great song, The Lost Chord. It's heavily Italianate in its accent. Sullivan should only have lived to hear this B flat at the end of
really?
His song.
Oh my.
It's stunning.
It's a very moving work,
yes,
anyway, but I do again.
Well, he wrote it because in reaction to his brother's death.
Uh-huh.
Sullivan's brother Frederick was one of his performers in Trial by Jury, and Frederick died. And Sullivan seems to have written some of his most glorious melodies when he was either in great physical pain or great personal emotional pain, such as Iolanthe. A lot of it was written as his mother was dying and then died. And he just pours out these glorious melodies. And Lost Chord's one of them.
And once again, I mean, we really never appreciated him, I think, as much when you grow up knowing Gilbert and Sullivan. That's what you think about Sullivan. But if you begin to listen to some of his symphonic works, I mean, the things
absolutely.
That he wrote, they're absolutely beautiful. You're so right. So here's Enrico Caruso singing The Lost Chord.
People forget that Sir Arthur Sullivan did write a grand opera, Ivanhoe, which had the longest run of any grand opera, continuous run. Unfortunately, it never went very far beyond that, and it's rarely been revived. It's only been performed in the United States once. was performed in Berlin, but other than that, it has not been heard very frequently. This is an aria from that opera sung by the Lady Rowena, and the title of it is O Moon, Thou Art Thou Clad in Silver Mail. It's a beautiful part for the harp.
Now, Dan, you also mentioned something about a cantata.
The Golden Legend was his most successful choral work. It's a cantata based on Longfellow's poem of that name, which is appropriate because this is, of course, the 200th anniversary of Longfellow.
Dan, you said you wanted to add something to this discussion as well.
WRTI is very much to be commended because the people here seem to enjoy Sullivan's other music. I've heard the Irish Symphony, which is a terrific piece.
Beautiful, yeah.
The Overture to Macbeth, I know, is a particular favorite of Dave Conant because he plays it fairly frequently. Also, the In Memoriam Overture, which, as the Lost Chord, was written by the bedside of Fred Sullivan. The In Memoriam Overture was written to remember his father, who had died just a few months before he composed it.
What I also wanted to talk about here was the perception of what the Savoy Company was, and not only this one, but most of the Gilbert and Sullivan companies around the country. And I was talking to you earlier about the fact that it was a kind of an elitist group of people that got together, not necessarily because they were elitist, but because they loved Gilbert and Sullivan, but they happened to be professional people from certain strata. And it's quite interesting. Dick, you were saying that has changed tremendously.
Well, the company, for instance, go back a little bit to the founding days. When you read the annals, and they talk about Dr. Allen and his sister and a close friend, the annals report that these young people were rehearsing in the living rooms of their parents, almost like a garage band setup.
Mm-hmm.
That they just had this spark, this drive, this love to do this, and out of nothing they created a company that's now going on for 106 years, which is community-based. It's all volunteer with one or two exceptions. And so that as society has changed, Savoy has also morphed to reflect this. And so that it is really a group that is drawn from practically every corner of the Delaware Valley. We have lawyers, doctors, music teachers, regular teachers.
Plain ordinary people.
Well, yeah, exactly. But we are all drawn together by this desire that we like to perform, and we really happen to love Gilbert and Sullivan and the beautiful music and the incredible parody and wit of Gilbert. Because Gilbert really was a revolutionary of his time in the English stage, elevating it above what was considered a almost vaudevillian level of average mediocrity.
Well, people didn't quite know what to do with Gilbert and Sullivan. Yep. You could go there to listen to the performances at the theater, the Savoy Theater, in full, I guess, dress. I mean, this was an event. This is what everyone did, people from all stratas of society.
Yep.
But I think, personally, what is the magical thing about Gilbert and Sullivan is not the professional performances, but the ones that are done by what we would call amateur group on a very, very high level. And that, too, is probably an outgrowth of the parlor singing that you're talking about. Because at a certain period in the early 20th century, and maybe the very end of the 19th, parlor singing was what people did. That's what they did. There was no television. You couldn't really go out to theater or opera, just every day of the week. So it was the piano, it was the parlor, it was singing around the piano and the kind of music that one would sing. And I think this is kind of an outgrowth of picking up on the professional, which was very high level, and bringing it to the community, as you say. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Yes. I mean, there's a book written by Ian Bradley recently about the enduring lore of Gilbert and Sullivan, and he just goes around the world interviewing. In fact, I think he interviewed Dan, didn't he, when
yes.
he came here? He interviewed me by total happenstance. And he's gone around the world tracking what has kept these operettas alive and growing on a constant
basis.
And
what was the answer for that?
I mean, it's people love to get together and they perform this beautiful music. The satire is constantly current, and you don't have to update it that much to stay right on target. I don't think we've changed a single word in this pinafore.
No, we have not.
What have you done with the pinafore, though? Have you changed anything about it other than your regular production?
I would say no. This is a very traditional production. We have not always done completely traditional productions, but this one really is. And I think it's partly because so many people have sung in HMS Pinafore in everywhere from, as you mentioned, Joe, from kindergarten on up, that there's a certain expectation that people don't have for the less familiar operas, so that we really have hewed to the tradition in, to a large degree this time.
And you have a coterie of musicians that you use all the time?
Well, the membership changes every year, particularly the chorus, but we have people who have been around for many, many years. And then we're very fortunate in that we have our orchestra contractor, Norman Spielberg, who's a graduate of the Boyer College. And we have always an excellent professional orchestra for all four performances.
Which you really need because it's very demanding,
absolutely.
I think.
And then there's the vision of the stage director, Mike Tunney, who's also a College of Music student back.
Right.
He and I had the same teacher at Temple, Bob Groters. And so Mike, as a performer and also as a great stage director, his vision is to keep this clean, to unclutter it of various things that get layered on, and to really walk a fine line just to what's in the score, and what are Gilbert's words, and let them speak for themselves.
So it's traditional in a sense.
Oh, yes, very,
very traditional.
Much so.
Now, once again, if you want to get tickets for either performance, the June 15th and 16th at the Academy is at 8 p.m., and how would one go about doing that? Do you just call the...
Well, we do have a phone number, a website, and also they are on sale at the Academy and Kimmel Center box office for the Academy of Music, but the website is SavoyShop.com. So they're online. They're at the Kimmel Center Academy box offices.
And for the Longwood concert?
The same.
The same.
And the phone number to call is 215-735-7161.
What if someone wanted to join the company? How do you do that?
Well, usually, if someone wants to join, usually they come through somebody who is already a member, and then they meet the people in the company, and there's a musical audition.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously. Now, for the people that work backstage, they generally want to know what their particular skills are, whether it's painting or carpentry or whatever. But that's generally how it happens. Although we have a website, Savoy.org, and more of our new members have come through the internet, because people get to the area that have sung Gilbert and Sullivan in other parts of the country, and they just get onto the internet and find us.
I think that is so amazing. I mean, when you say they've sung these roles in other parts of the country and they just come to a new place and they say, okay, I'm going to go to the Savoy Company, or mm-hmm. at least try. It's a marvelous.
My personal story. Last year, I left the Philadelphia area, went up to Bard College.
Yes.
One of the first things I did before I moved into my apartment was find the Gilbert and Sullivan group in the Mid-Hudson Valley. And so that was one of my first phone calls.
Yes. It's like going to a synagogue or to a church when you move into a new area. Yeah. But here is a group that you will identify with immediately. Now, who are the headliners for the Pinafore, the leads?
Well, Brendan O'Brien is playing the role of Sir Joseph Porter, KCB. He last year did Jack Point for us in The Yeoman of the Guard, which is the most serious of the Gilbert and Sullivan operas. We have a wonderful new soprano, Jennifer D. Giuseppe, as Josephine. And to continue mention of the Boyer College of Music, Stephen Caldwell is our Rafe Rackstraw. He just graduated from Temple with a master's in voice. He's also been an instructor at the Boyer College and probably will remain as an instructor next year. We have Fran Bjornby Kramer, who's a prominent professional singer who's playing Little Buttercup, our dear Barb Rayer, who's been around with us for a number of years, is playing Cousin Hebe, and, of course, Mr. Schaap is playing Captain Corcoran. Did I miss anybody, Dick?
Oh, well, Dick Deadeye.
Oh, yes.
And the Carpenter.
Oh, yes. Kevin Strauss is the Carpenter, and Dick Deadeye, Michael Dura, who's a very experienced grand opera singer.
Following the footstep of our founder, is we have a doctor on board.
Dr.
Todd.
Oh, Todd Florin is the bosun, and he's also an intern at Children's Hospital. And he has done lots of Gilbert and Sullivan. He's been a conductor at the College Light Opera on Cape Cod. So lots of experience there.
Lots of experience and a lot of really professionalism. And I want to thank both of you for coming here on Crossover. We can't wait to see either performance or all. And thank you so very, very much once again. Good luck.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.